Hey, I'm Eric Tornberg, and welcome to Maker Stories, where we explore what makes the makers, what drives them, what they're scared of, how they make sense of the world, and everything in between. This week's episode is with Troy Carter. Troy is at the convergence of entertainment and tech, the founder of Atom Factory, and now Smashed Labs, which is an accelerator. Troy's artist roster has included Lady Gaga, John Legend, Miguel, and his startup investment portfolio has included startups such as Uber, Dropbox, and Spotify. He's really one of the first to meld these two worlds together before it became a mainstream thing to do. In this podcast episode, we talk about Troy's work navigating both worlds, the opportunities in the music industry, and how Troy wants to be for entrepreneurs what Nike was for athletes. This interview took place at the Launch Conference a few months ago, and it's a much shorter interview, but packed with some good insights. All right, here's Troy.
So for those people who don't know Troy Carter, please give a brief background on yourself and what's Atom Factory?
Well, Atom Factory is a talent management company. The core of our company is music, but we also have a division where we invest in a lot of early stage technology companies.
And Troy is being super modest, as always, but you are at the intersection really leading entertainment and tech. You get both, you translate between both, you connect both. How did you manage artists such as John Legend, previously Lady Gaga, your investments. Are you an Uber and Lyft?
Yeah.
You have fantastic, how many investments total?
About 75 investments.
75, Genius is also one of them? Rap
yes,
Genius?
Yes, Genius as well.
Who are some other companies that they might know?
Dropbox, yeah. Warby Parker, Spotify, Wish.
I could let you go on and on. Yeah. So some big wins. How did you get to where you are right now? Did it start on the management side with Lady Gaga? Or how did you, what's your story?
My background, I come from Philadelphia. I started off as a kid carrying records for DJ Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince and those guys. And came to LA and worked for Will's production company there. I hated LA, moved back to Philadelphia, and I was throwing parties and promoting concerts, and I met a guy on just through that journey, P. Diddy, as he started Bad Boy Entertainment. So I went and worked for Puff, and what was great is to be able to, I learned a lot of the business from Will and those guys on the high end, and really learned how to refine my hustle from working with Puff. So, when I started out doing my own thing on the music side, I just kind of fused those two styles together and just kept hustling ever since.
Well, what's interesting is that you are much less public than Will and Puff. Is that just your nature?
Yeah, for me, I'm just one of those people who I still want to be able to go to the movies and enjoy the mall with the kids and that sort of thing. And for me, representing talent, I understand the upside, but also the downside of fame. So I've just always tried to have some discretion.
And you don't even have a Twitter account.
No Twitter
you
account.
You keep it really, really down low, kind of. So how did you started managing Lady Gaga? Is that kind of the first, is that the biggest act you were working with at the time?
Yeah, well, it's hard to top that with her being probably one of the biggest stars in the world. But I started my business off mostly managing hip-hop clients. So my original company I started in 99 called Irving Wonder. We did a lot of the Rough Riders and, some of the acts that were in Rockefeller. And then I sold that company in 2004 to a company called Sanctuary out of the UK. And one of the biggest issues that, that's when I learned about company culture. So, I sold to this, big publicly traded company, and but sold my culture, as well. So when I got the company back and started in 2007, Lady Gaga was the first client that I had signed to Atom Factory.
And then so we understand how you got into music and you had, great, amazing role models or collaborators that you could learn from and work with. How did you get into tech?
We kind of stumbled into tech. I think in 2008 when we put out Gaga's music, one of the issues where we couldn't get played on the radio. So we used, and at that time, Facebook was coming out of .edu, and you had Twitter on the rise. You had a lot of new platforms that were kind of going wide at the time, and we just kind of took advantage of those opportunities out of a bit of, out of desperation, right. And but just because we couldn't get the music played on the radio, and people up here, you know, in the valley started taking notice to what we were doing, and we just started building relationships, you know, both with the startup community and with some of the larger companies. And I think also at that time, a lot of the companies in LA, the content companies, were very litigious. So all of a sudden, it's a friendly face, you know, showing up saying, look, we want to use your platforms and we want to partner with you. So that kind of opened up the door for collaboration.
So if it was Will and P. Diddy in music, who was it in tech that, you know, kind of got you in or collaborated with?
Joe Lonsdale, the founder of Palantir, was definitely instrumental in just kind of showing me the ropes here. And it was also a guy named Matt Mickelson. So I think between Joe and Matt, those were the guys who really, you know, navigated me my first year, you know, just kind of during my exploratory phase. And then Shervin Pishavar from Sherper was definitely helpful in terms of introducing me to deals. And now I would say Bill Maris and the Google Venture guys have been fantastic just in terms of showing me the ropes of investment.
And when did you first start getting into investing?
My first investment was about 5 years ago, and that was in a company called Tiny Chat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And I remember Tiny Chat. And so 5 years later, now, you know, Chamillionaire is an EIR at Upfront. Nas got a fund. Snoop's about to raise a fund. You know, it seems everyone and their mother is getting in technology,
yeah,
from the celebrity space.
Yeah.
Some people are really excited about it. Some people are really skeptical.
Yeah.
As someone who was, you know, one of the first people, if not the first person high profile doing it, how do you kind of think about this convergence of Hollywood and Silicon Valley?
I think the convergence is inevitable, you know, just because, you know, I think we're going to see this very blurred line between distribution and content. The same way we're looking at Netflix and Amazon, and, you know, you're running into those guys at the Oscars and the Emmys now. And so I think we're going to see the convergence is inevitable. But, you know, I think that the celebrity side of funds and investing, I think it should be approached with excitement and skepticism, because I think, you know, some people, you know, a guy like Ashton Kutcher, is just his portfolio is better than a lot of VC portfolios that I see. And I think he's a fantastic investor. He's very thoughtful. He takes it seriously. And so when I think Ashton and those guys and what Guy Oseri is doing, I think it's special. And then, of course, you're going to have, like with any market, when it's a lot of money, you're going to have, when real estate was hot, everybody wanted to be a real estate agent or mortgage broker. So I think we're going to see the same sort of flood in tech. And I think, you know, the guys who are serious and thoughtful and great investors, they'll rise to the top. And the guys who thought it was a hobby, as soon as it'll get tough, they'll go on to the next hustle.
And it's worth noting that it also works both ways. People in tech are fascinated with what's happening in Hollywood and looking to get involved in the movie business or the music business. And it's interesting. Do you see opportunities there as well?
Yeah, no, what's interesting, last night I had dinner with Fred Wilson and David Lee. You know, just David's hardcore SF, Fred's hardcore New York. And, you know, both guys, you know, live part-time in L.A. now. And, you know, the Andreessen guys are in L.A. a lot. And, you know, the Sherpa guys are in L.A. So now, you know, I think there's going to be a natural migration from San Francisco, Palo Alto, down to L.A. for a lot of reasons. Everything from cost of starting a business to, you know, cost of living, quality of life, you know. So I think as expensive as I thought L.A. was when I first moved there, it's cheap compared, right, to, you know, starting a business and living up here.
So it's interesting because you would think that if Hollywood's trying to get more in Silicon Valley, that'd be the other way around, that L.A. would be moving to San Francisco. But you see a lot of SF moving to L.A.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of people from north down south now. And also just even on my flight, you know, up here a couple hours ago, you know, it's like a shuttle from entrepreneurs and investors from LA flying up here. So I think it's going to go both ways. Right. But I'm just, you know, but I think when I started about 4 or 5 years ago, it was more of a one-way ticket to North, right, versus, you know, anybody spending meaningful time in LA.
And it's also worth noting that both sides are taking kind of each other's playbook. A lot more founders are really learning to how actors and artists are building their audiences on social media and other platforms and doing it themselves too. These kind of, you know, founder celebrities now.
Yeah, I think it's important. You know, it's because I think it's a natural. LA's been telling stories for the last 125 years, basically, and you know, and just the. When you think about branding and you think about community and you think about all of those things, I think it's a place that's really rich and history. It's just something that we do every single day. So and that's been a value add to the portfolio companies that we invest in, because I think, you know, us doing it with our clients day in and day out, there's a lot to be learned from that.
And what's your investment thesis?
Find great entrepreneurs and stay very close. It's as easy as that, you know. And also, you know, I think that's the simplified answer. But, you know, we have our checklist where, you know, we don't lead rounds at this point. And, you know, we co-invest with, you know, great angels and great VCs. So there's a level of protection there. And, you know, and for me, you know, the same thing that rings in my gut when I see a great artist walk into my office, I think I've developed that same thing for noticing great entrepreneurs as well.
Right. And awesome. So you have the management side you've been doing forever. You have the investment side you've been doing for a while. And yesterday, you guys just launched Smashed. Tell us about Smashed.
You know, the idea behind Smashed was really an opportunity in the marketplace that we saw, you know, because I'm on the tech blogs every day, but I'm also on Complex and on Fader and on Vice and in those places. And from spending time with a lot of entrepreneurs and you hear these stories, you know, I don't think a lot of the stories are being told. And I also didn't think there was coverage of how technology is really affecting culture. You know, so we decided, you know, let's create this Forbes meets Fader platform and tell these stories.
It's interesting because when Chameleon Air got his EIR, you know, announcement last week, it wasn't all over the hip hop blogs. It was, but they kind of didn't know how to explain it because they didn't know what EIR, you know, EIR is kind of ambiguous anyway in the tech world.
Yeah.
But it's just interesting how those cultures are going to continue to collide, and there is an opportunity for a voice there.
Well, yeah, it's going to be one thing, you know, and you know, even with the clients that we represent, the music comes first, but a close second is technology.
And the client, besides John Legend, who are some of the other clients?
We represent Meghan Trainor. We represent, like, Lindsey Stirling, who we represent, is a great example of that convergence between platform and music. You know, YouTube is just as important to her as the violin she plays, you know, so, and it just kind of is one of those things that goes hand in hand. And, you know, and so technology is front and center with the artists that we represent.
And you also, you mentioned that this, you want Atom Factory to be a media company. Tell us about how you see the future of Atom Factory and the future of your kind of career going. How can you even go up from here? How do you think about it?
No, I just think it, you know, when we sign artists, it's all and also even us dealing with entrepreneurs, it's all about point of view. We look for very unique point of views, and everything that we try to do, we don't want it to be derivative of it can't be carbon copy.
Right.
You know, I think you can look at other great companies and pull things here and there. But the worst thing for me is just being a carbon copy of what somebody else is doing. So just as we look at our space and our value proposition as a company, I think when it comes to really understanding culture, music, technology, entrepreneurship is one of those languages that I think we have ownership in that space. And so I think building Smashed is just us being able to articulate that to the world. So the content we build, I, and personally, one of my missions is to do, I want to be for entrepreneurs what Nike was to athletes. It's as simple as that, you know. So where it wasn't just about the shoe, it was about being that resource and also being that voice.
Right. And I was asking Tim earlier, how are we going to tell the narrative of what's happening here to the rest of the world? Because it's hard. It's not simple concept. And
and the thing is, you know, and that's part of the beauty of Smashed is because, you know, the same way you just explained, you know, Chamillionaire's EIR at a VC firm or whatever, only the Valley understands that, you know, and I think it's this language that's being spoken where, you know, the if you don't have a certain IQ, it's going to go over your head. And technology, and I think that's Apple's done a fantastic job of being able to simplify technology for the every man and the every woman. And if you build a platform that can simplify that for people and that doesn't intimidate people, then I think is one of those things that people will show up to.
Awesome. So what can people expect, and we'll end with this, what can people expect from you going forward, from Smash going forward, from Atom Factory? What should they be on the lookout for?
You know, I just want to continue to just experiment, try, find artists that are going to break molds, invest in companies that are going to break molds, and hopefully Atom Factory could be one of those companies that can continue to break molds.
And how are you going to be for entrepreneurs what Nike was for athletes?
You'll see.
That's amazing. Troy, thank you. Please give a round of applause for Troy. It's a true honor to have him come to San Francisco.
Thank you.